Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Hanok, it's Jasmine.
How are you, Jasmine?
Good. And you?
Baruch Hashem. Are you having a better week?
Yeah, it's much better.
Good.
Baruch Hashem.
So we'll start in 1 minute, whether somebody comes or not. If at 10 minutes it's just you, we'll deal with that then.
Okay.
Please join me in saying the Ana Bekoa. Ana Beko Gedula Chimba Tati Serura Alephet Gimel Yitav Tzadi Kabel Rinat Amapayenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Na gibor dor sheyechud cha kevavak shamrem nun gimel dalet yud kafshin barchem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem betet reish Saritaf Gimel. Hasim Kadosh Biro Tucha Nael Adata Tet Kufet Tet Nunayan Yachid Geye Lamcha Tene Zokre Kiddushata Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. Shabbatenu Kabel, Ushmatziakatenu, Yodea Talumot, Shin Kufav, Zadi Yutaf. The letters of the month of Cheshvan, the Dalet that created the planet Ma'adim, the planet Mars, and the Nun that created the constellation Akrav, the astrological sign of Scorpio. Together, the Dalet and the Nun spell the Hebrew word Din, which means judgment. We have brought creation into our space. So now we will separate between the right column energy and the left column energy of that creation. And we utilize the 13 attributes of mercy for that purpose. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apayim V'rav Chesed V'emet, No tsechesed la lafim, no se awon wa fesha, bechata'a vinake. We're now going to connect to a verse from the Zohar that has the energy of certainty. It's from Parasha Yitro, it's Pasuk 29. We'll start with a L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kut shabarichu ishkinte bid hilu. Urchimud hilu, hilu, urchimu. Li'at ga l'shem yud hei bevav hei. Yehuda shulim b'shem kol Yisrael, limud Torah mitzvah, la'asok Torah mitzvah, vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu konenei, aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu konenehu. Rabbi Abba Amar, Beka Ma'atar, Tane Nan Dekucha, Perichu Koma Diaved, Leela Witata, Kola Ihu, Kishot Viovada, Dikshot, Veleilach Mila Bialma, Divae Barnash. Ledach yaleya mineya ulan haga peya kalana tehakulu ovada tikshot inun wikola itzdirich bi alma The energy of the year 5778 is bowing to Hashem until we walk with Hashem. There are two verses that connect to this energy in the Tanakh. The first is 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 6. Vayishkav Amnon vayidchal vayavo hamelech liroto vayomer Amnon El HaMelech Tavo Natamar Achoti Utlabev Le'ene Shete Levivot Ve'ere Me'ada. The second verse that connects to this energy is Psalm chapter 32, verse 5. In this verse, the name of the year, Tashinai and Het, are separated by three letters. Chatati odiacha viavoni lo kisiti amarti ode ale batpeshai ladonai ohe wahe viata nasata Avon Chatati Sela. The year 5777, known as the year of the goat, there are also two verses connecting to that energy in this Tanakh. The first verse we've studied is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52. Sod Saduni Tatipo Olivai Chinam. When we take the first letters of these words, we're able to create Satskiya, which translates as appear like brothers. When we take the final letters of these words, we have Diryam, which translates as a sea of tenants. The second verse that connects to this year of the goat is Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. The name of the year, Tashinayan Zion, is concealed within this verse. The letters of the name of the year are separated by three letters each. Kim ba Adonai yo hey wahe. Elohechem padibatu kasher asitem ad hayom hazeh. The year 5776, the year of the pause that refreshes, also has two verses. The first one that we study is 2 Chronicles, chapter 29, verse 34. Rakatohu ha'yulimah v'lo yachlu ha'avshi. O ha'ol Vayechas Achechem Hadvim Ad Kelotam Lacha Viad Yitkad Shu Hakohani Ki Halim Yishrei Levav Lehitkadesh Meha Kohani. This verse has five words. When we take the first letter of each word, we're able to permute it into eight names of God. Adonai Elohe Lalae Wa 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 Yo Alame Hey 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 Aka A Reka Ha. The second verse, Isaiah chapter 26, verse 4. Vitu ba Adonai Yohiwa Ade Ad Ya Yo Hei Adonai Yo Hei Wa Hei Tur Olami. We get to 775 and the energy of peace in the Middle East. There are three verses that speak to this energy. I'm receiving a lot of static, so I'd appreciate if you would mute your phones by pressing star 6. Thank you. The first verse of the three we studied is Job chapter 7, verse 19. I had to mute everybody because we were still getting that static. So if you want to ask a question, feel free to do so by pressing star 6. Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishem imeni lo tarpeni at bili ruki. Next we study 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol hamachavoyia asher yitchabe sham v'shavtem elai el nachon v'halachti yitchem v'chayayim yashno v'aretz v'hipasti oto b'kol alfei Yehuda. And then Job chapter 20, verse 7. Kegelo lanetzach yoved roav yom ruayo. The year 5774, that has the energy of peace in the Middle East. There is only one energy, one verse that connects to this energy. It's 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wasamti makom liami li Israel untati vishakan tata vilo yergaz od vilo yosifu bnei avla anoto ka asher barishona. We will now connect to the 72 names of God. We do this by taking all 216 letters with their root vowels and saying them out loud in sequences of three. Wahe wa yo la yo sayote ala me mehe shi la la he aka aka he ta he zayo ala da la awa he he a. Yozala me behe he reyo he kome la awa kala yo la wawa he he la nu la ha yo 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 me la he 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 wa nu ta he he a yo re ta shi a he Reyao yo awame lahikabe washire yo yo he wa lahe he kawako me nuda anu yo he ame re he a yo yoza he 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 me yo ha yo wa 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 la yo la he sa a la a re yo Ashila me yo he wa he wa da nu yo he he she a pe me nu nu wa nu yo ta me be he pe wa yo nu me me yo yo la he re he me ta re wa me be yo he he a nu wa me he yo da me be me nu ko A yo a he be wa, re a he yo be me, he yo yo me wa me. There are three names that connect to the energy of the year 5778. The name number 13, Yud Zion Lamed, Yozala, has the energy of heaven on earth. Name number 14, Mem Bet He. May, bay, hey, as the energy of farewell to arms. And name number 30, Aleph, Vav, Mem, Awa, May, has the energy of building bridges. And we learn from this that when we do build bridges among people and we strive to reduce conflict in the world, and especially wars, but there can be conflicts in our houses, conflicts between among our friends, conflicts among our families, extended or otherwise. When we reduce conflicts, we are saying farewell to arms. We're reducing wars in the world. And this is how we bring heaven down to earth. Now we will connect to the 72 names from the Tzaddikim in the same manner. Wa, 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 yo, yo, yo. Sa be te al ame, me be shi la yo he, anu a ka me ta. He he yo anu da, la he wa he me a. Yo ta la me me re he, he yo yo he me me. La wa wa ka be wa yo, la yo wa pe nu la. Nu me ha yo he yo, me nu he, he he wa. Nu yo he, he shi a, yo re ta, shi a he. Re la yo, a wa me, la yo be, wa he re. Yo yo la, la he be he, ka a ko, me nu da. A nu yo, he wa me, re he a, yo he za. Hey she ah hey hey she hey me ka ha wa wa la yo yo hey sa a la a re yo a la me ka hey wa hey wa da la yo hey yo she a la me nu hey a nu wa ta me la hey pe a yo nu ko me Yo re la he be he me za re. Wa he be yo a he a la wa me za yo. Da he be me ka ko a la a he he wa. Re la he yo yo me he la yo me he me. Name number 30. Has the same letters and is in the same location in both charts. It's Aleph Vav Mem, Awa Mei, and it has the energy of building bridges. And we learn from this extra emphasis, how important reducing conflicts are in the world and conflicts between people, how important that is in order to bring the Mashiach. And the Tzaddikim who left this day, the 25th day of Cheshvan, Rabbi Avraham ben Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, Rabbi Naphtali ben Rabbi Elazar of Lizentz, Rabbi Mordechai Rokeach of Bilgoria, Rabbi Mordechai ben Rabbi Yisachar Dov of Belz, the Rokeach, Rabbi Elia Yurkansky, and the eighth verse of the Anna B'Koach we say in a whisper. Today's class is an essay by Rabbi Ashlag. It's a very powerful essay, as you will see. You can find the link on row 16 of the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, the right-hand column. That's a landing page for all of Rabbi Ashlag's essays. And this is row 32, or number 32. The title is An Introduction to a Book, known as the Panim Meirot Umasbirot. Section 1. It is written at the end of the Mishnah of Okhatsin, the Creator did not find a receptacle that holds a blessing for Israel, but peace, as it is written, the Lord will give strength unto his people, the Lord will bless his people with peace. There is a lot to learn here. First, how did they prove that nothing is better for Israel than peace? Second, the text explicitly states that peace is the blessing itself, as it is written, giving in strength and blessing in peace. According to them, it should have stated giving in peace. Third, why was this phrase written to at end of the Mishnah? Also, we need to understand the meaning of the words peace, strength, and what they mean. To interpret this article in its true meaning, we must go by a long way around, for the heart of sayers is too deep to search. This means that all the issues of the Torah and the mitzvahs bear revealed and concealed, as it is written. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Indeed, the halachot, the collective name for Torah and mitzvot, are like grails of wine. When one gives one's friend a gift, a grail of wine, then both the insides and the outsides are important. This is because the grail has its own value, as does the wine inside it. The legends, however, are as apples. Their interior is eaten and their exterior is thrown away, as the exterior is completely worthless. You find that all the worth and importance are only in the interior, the insides. So is the matter with legends, the apparent superficiality seems meaningless and worthless. However, the inner content concealed in the words is built slowly on the bedrock of the wisdom of truth, given to a virtuous few. Who would dare extract it from the heart of the masses and scrutinize their ways when their attainment is incomplete in both parts of the Torah called Peshat, meaning the literal level, and the Drash, the interpretation? In their view, the order of the four parts of the Torah, the Pardes, begins with the Peshat, then the Drash, then the Remes, which is insinuated, and in the end, the Sod, the secret, is understood. That's what most people think before they start to study the Zohar. However, it is written in the Vilna Gaon prayer book that the attainment begins with the sod, the secrets. After the sod part of the Torah is attained, it is possible to attain the drash part, and then the remes part. When one is granted complete knowledge of these three parts of the Torah, one is then awarded the attainment of the Peshat part of the Torah. This is an unwritten commentary. That does seem strange, does it not? You read the Tanakh, you start with the stories, and if you understand the stories, then you can move on to the hints, you can move on to the allegories, and ultimately you can find the secrets. But Rabbi Ashlag is saying the opposite. He's saying first, actually the Gaon de Vilna is saying it, first you must understand the secrets, because they, only then can you understand the drash, the allegories. And only then can you, once you understand the allegories and the secrets, only then can you understand the hints. And once you have absorbed the hints, then you can understand the simple stories. Seems backwards, but it's not. It is written in the Masechet Tanit in Talmud, if one is rewarded, it becomes a portion of life to him. Not rewarded, it becomes a portion of death to him. Great merit is required in order to understand the Peshat of the texts, since first we must attain the three internal parts of the Torah, which the Peshat robes. And the Peshat will not be parsed. If one has not been rewarded with it, one needs great mercy, so it will not become a portion of death for him. In the story, this is an unwritten commentary, but in the story of the four who entered the Pardes, who went up or inside and meditated, and they approached the four levels of Torah. The first one to die was the one who strived to understand the simple stories. Because you cannot truly understand their depth without knowledge of the secrets. Continuing to read. It is the opposite of the argument of the negligent in attaining the interior, who say to themselves, we settle for attaining the Peshat. If we attain that, we will be content. Their words can be compared to one who wishes to step on the fourth step without first stepping on the first three steps. I am explaining that this physical world is said to be upside down, relative to the spiritual worlds. Thus, the sod needs to be learned first, then the drash, then the remes, and finally the peshat. Also, the translation of peshat is unclothed. The word peshat can be translated as unclothed or naked, as in raw, naked energy. That is why one needs the higher three levels to protect oneself from raw, naked energy. This is also why it tells us that we need great merit, which can only be built from learning the higher three levels. Section 2. However, accordingly, we need to understand the great concealing applied in the interior of the Torah. As it is said in Masechet Hagiga, one does not study Ma'aseh Bereshit in pairs, and not the Merkava alone.
Also, all the books at our disposal in this trade are sealed and blocked before the eyes of the masses. Only the few who are summoned by the Creator shall understand them, as they already understand the roots by themselves, and in reception from mouth to mouth. It is indeed surprising how the ways of wisdom and intelligence are denied of the people, for whom it is the life and the length of their days. It is seemingly a criminal offense, as about such our sages said in the Midrash Rabbah, Bereshit, about Achaz, that he was called Achaz, literally translated as held or seized, for he had seized synagogues and seminaries, and this was his great iniquity. Also, it is a natural law that one is possessive concerning dispensing one's capital and property to others. However, is there anyone who is possessive concerning dispensing one's wisdom and intelligence to others? Quite the contrary. More than the calf wants to eat, the cow wants to feed. Indeed, we find such mysteries in the wisdom, even in secular sages, in previous generations. In Rav Bhutni's introduction to his commentary on the Book of Creation, which is the Sefer Briah, there is a text ascribed to Plato, who warns his disciples as follows: do not convey the wisdom unto one who knows not its merit. Aristotle too warned, do not convey the wisdom to the unworthy, lest it shall be robbed. He, Rav Bhutri, interprets that if a sage teaches wisdom to the unworthy, they rob the wisdom and destroy it. The secular sages of our time do not do so. On the contrary, they exert in expanding the gates of their sagacity to the entire crowd without any boundaries and conditions. Seemingly, they strongly disagree with the first sages, who open the doors of their wisdom to only a handful of virtuous few, which they had found worthy, leaving the rest of the people fumbling against the walls. I am adding, this section is relatively easy to understand if one has the background in Bible and in Greek history. If you lack this information, you need to ask specific questions of those who do. Without specific questions, there is no merit being built. Section 3. Let me explain the matter. We distinguish four divisions in the speaking series, species, arranged in gradations, one atop the other. Those are the masses, the strong, the wealthy, and the sagacious. They are equal to the four degrees in the whole of reality called still, vegetative, animate, and speaking. I'm explaining that sagacious is a special aspect of wisdom. This person is connected to his or her intuition in a particular way. The still can deduce the three properties, vegetable, animal, and speaking. And we discern three values in the quantity of the force, from the beneficial and detrimental in them. The smallest force among them is the vegetable. The flora operates by attracting what is beneficial to it and rejecting the harmful in much the same way as humans and animals do. However, there is no individual sensation in it, but a collective force common to all types of plants in the world, which affects this operation in them. Atop them is the animal. Each creature feeds itself, concerning attracting what is beneficial to it and rejecting the harmful. It follows that one animal equalizes in value all of the plants in reality. It is so because the force that distinguishes the beneficial from the detrimental in the entire vegetable world is found in one creature, in the animate, separated to its own authority. The sensing force in the animal is very limited in time and space, since the sensation does not operate at even the shortest distance outside its body. Also, it does not feel anything outside its own time, meaning in the past or in the future, but only at the present moment. Atop them is the speaking, consisting of an emotional force and an intellectual force together. For this reason, its power is unlimited by time and space in attracting what is good for it and rejecting what is harmful, like the animate. This is so because of its science, which is a spiritual matter, unlimited by time and place. One can teach others wherever they are in the whole of reality, and in the past and the future throughout the generations. It follows that the value of one person from the speaking level equalizes with the value of all the forces in the vegetable and the animal in the whole of reality at that time, and in all the past generations. This is so because its power encompasses them and contains them within its own self, along with all of their forces. This ruling also applies to the four divisions in the human species, namely the masses, the strong, the wealthy, and the sagacious. Certainly they all come from the masses, which are the first degree, as it is written, all are of the dust. It is certain that the whole merit of the dust and its very right to exist is according to the merit of the three virtues it educes, vegetables, animals, and speaking. Also, the merit of the masses corresponds to the properties they educe from them. Thus, they do connect to the shape of a human face. For that purpose, the Creator instilled three inclinations in the masses, called envy, lust, and honor. Due to them, the masses develop degrees by degree to educe a face of a whole man. The inclination for lust educes the wealthy. The selected among them have a strong desire and also lust. They excel in acquiring wealth, which is the first degree in the evolution of the masses, like the vegetable degree in the general reality. They are governed by an alien force that deviates them to their inclination. As lust is an alien force in the human species, borrowed from the animal. The inclination for honor educes the famous heroes from among them. They govern the synagogues, the town, etc. The most firm-willed among them, which also have an inclination for honor, excel in obtaining dominion. These are the second degree in the evolution of the masses, similar to the animate degree in the whole of reality, whose operating force is present in their own essence. As we have said above, this is because the inclination for honor is unique to the human species, and along with it, the craving for governance. The inclination for envy elicits the sages from among them. As our sages said, author's envy increases wisdom. The strong-willed with the inclination for envy excel in acquiring wisdom and knowledge. It is like the speaking degree in the whole of reality, in which the operating force is not limited by time and place, but is collective and encompasses every item in the world throughout all times. Also, it is the nature of the fire of envy to be general, encompassing all times and the whole reality. This is because it is a conduct of envy. If one had not seen the object in one's friend's possession, the desire for it would not have been awakened at all. You find that the sensation of absence is not for what one does not have, but for what one's friend has, who has the entire progeny of Adam and Eve throughout the generations. Thus, this force is unlimited, and it is therefore fit for its sublime and elated role. Yet those who remain without any merit, it is because they do not have a strong desire. Hence, all three above mentioned inclinations operate in them together in mixture. Sometimes they are lustful, sometimes envious, and sometimes they crave honor. Their desire breaks to pieces, and they are like children who crave everything they see and cannot attain anything. Hence their value is like the straw and bran that remains after the flower. It is known that the beneficial force and the detrimental force go hand in hand. In other words, as much as something can benefit, so it can harm. Hence, since the force of one person is greater than all the beasts and the animals of all times, one's harmful force supersedes them all as well. Thus, as long as one does not merit one's degree in a way that one uses one's force only to do good, one needs a careful watch so he will not acquire great amounts of the human level, which is wisdom and science. For this reason, the first sages hid the wisdom from the masses for fear of taking indecent disciples who would use the force of the wisdom to harm and damage. These would break and destroy the entire population with their lust and beastly savageness, using man's great powers. When the generations have lessened and their sages themselves have started to crave both tables, meaning a good life for their physicality also, their views drew near to the masses. They traded with them and sold the wisdom as prostitutes for the price of a dog. Since then, the fortified wall that the first had exerted on has been ruined, and the masses have looted it. The savages have filled their hands with the force of men, seized the wisdom, and tore it. Half was inherited by adulterers, and half by murderers, and they have put it in eternal disgrace to this day. That's some powerful language and colorful, picturesque, although I wouldn't use picturesque in a positive sense. There's a lot there, isn't there? Section 4. From that you can deduce about the wisdom of truth, which contains all the secular teachings within it, which are its seven little maids. This is the entirety of the human species and the purpose for which all the worlds were created. As it is written, if my covenant be not with day and night, if I have not appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. Hence our sages have stated, he who uses the crown passes. This is because they have prohibited us from using it for any sort of worldly pleasure. This is what has sustained us thus far, to maintain the armies and the wall around the wisdom of truth, so no stranger or foreigner would break in and put it in their vessels, to go and trade in it in the market, as with the secular sages. This was so because all who enter have already been tested by seven tests, until it was certain beyond any concern and suspicion. After these words and truth, we find what appears to be a great contradiction from one extreme to the other in the words of our sages. It is written in the Zohar that at the time of the Messiah, this wisdom will be revealed even to the young. However, according to the above, we learn that in the days of the Messiah, that whole generation will be at the highest level. We will need to guard it. We will need no guard at all, and the fountains of wisdom will open and water the whole nation. Yes, in the Shechet Sutta and the Sanhedrin, they said, impudence shall soar at the time of the Messiah. Author's wisdom shall go astray, and righteous shall be a castaway. It interprets that there is none so evil as that generation. Thus, how do we reconcile the two statements? For both are certainly the words of the living God. The thing is that this careful watch and door locking on the hall of wisdom is for fear of people in whom the spirit of writer's envy is mixed with the force of lust and honor. Their envy is not limited to wanting any wisdom and knowledge. Hence, both texts are correct, and one comes and teaches of the other. The face of the generation is as the face of the dog, meaning they bark as dogs have. Have. Righteous are cast away, and author's wisdom went astray in them. It follows that it is permitted to open the gates of the wisdom and remove the careful guard, since it is naturally safe from theft and exploitation. There is no longer fear lest indecent disciples might take it and sell it in the market to the materialistic plebes, since they will find no buyers for this merchandise, as it is loathsome in their eyes. And since they have no hope of acquiring lust and honor through it, it has become safe and guarded by itself. No stranger will draw near except lovers of wisdom and its dwellers. Hence, any examination shall be removed from those who enter until even the very young will be able to attain it. Now you can understand their words. The Son of David comes either in a generation that is all worthy or all unworthy. This is very perplexing. Seemingly, as long as there are a few righteous in the generation, they detain the redemption. When the righteous perish from the land, the Messiah will be able to come. I wonder. Indeed, we should thoroughly understand that this matter of redemption and the coming of the Messiah that we hope will be soon in our days, and may we all say Amen, is the uppermost wholeness of attainment and knowledge, as it is written, and they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the greatest of them until the least of them. and with the completeness of the mind, the bodies are completed also. As it is written, the youngest shall die 100 years old. When the children of Israel are complimented with the complete knowledge of the fountains of intelligence, and knowledge shall flow beyond the boundaries of Israel, and water all the nations of the world, as it is written, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as it is written, and shall come unto the Lord and to his goodness. The proliferation of this knowledge is the matter of the expansion of the Messiah, the King, to all the nations. Yet it is the opposite with the crude materialistic plebes, since their imagination is attached to the complete power of the fist. The matter of the expansion of the bodies, expansion of the kingdom of Israel, is engraved in their imagination only as a sort of dominion of bodies over bodies, to take their fee from the whole with great pride and to be haughty over all the peoples in the world. And what can I do for them of ours if our sages have already rejected them and the likes of them from among the congregation of the Lord, saying, all who is proud, the Creator says, he and I cannot dwell in the same abode. Conversely, some err and determine that as the body must exist prior to the existence of the soul and the complete perception, the perfection of the body and the needs proceed in time, the attainment of the soul and the complete perception. Hence, complete perception is denied of a weak body. This is a grave mistake, harder than death, since a perfect body is inconceivable whatsoever before the complete perception has been attained. This is because in itself it is a punctured bag, a broken cistern. It cannot contain anything beneficial, neither for itself nor for others, except with the attainment of the complete knowledge. At that time, the body too rises to its completeness. With it, literally hand in hand, this rule applies both in individuals and in the whole. Section 5. Now you will understand what is written in the Zohar. With this composition, the children of Israel will be redeemed from exile. Also, in many other places, only through the expansion of the wisdom of Kabbalah in the masses will we obtain complete redemption. They also said, excuse me. They also said, the light in it reforms him. They were intentionally meticulous about it to show us that only the light enclosed within it, like apples of gold in settings of silver, in it lies the cure that reforms a person. Both the individual and the nation will not complete the aim for which they were created, except by attaining the internality of the Torah and its secrets. And although we hope for the complete attainment at the coming of the Messiah, it is written, we'll give wisdom to the wise, It also says, I have put wisdom in the heart of every wise at heart. Hence, it is the great expansion of the wisdom of truth within the nation that we need first, so we may merit receiving the benefit from our Messiah. Consequently, the expansion of the wisdom and the coming of our Messiah are interdependent. Therefore, we must establish seminaries and compose books to hasten the distribution of the wisdom throughout the nation. And this was not the case before, for fear lest unworthy disciples would mingle, as we have elaborated above. This became the primary reason for the prolonging of the exile, for our many sins to this day. Our sages said, Messiah, son of David, comes only in a generation that is all worthy, meaning when everyone retires from pursuit of honor and lust. At that time, it will be possible to establish many seminaries to prepare them for the coming of the Messiah, the son of David. Or in a generation that is all unworthy, meaning in such a generation when the face of the generation is as the face of the dawn, and righteous shall be cast away. The author's wisdom shall go astray in them, and such a time it will be possible to remove the careful guard, and all who remain in the house of Jacob, with their hearts pounding, to attain the wisdom and the purpose. Holy will be their names, and they shall come and study. This is so because there will no longer be fear, lest one might not sustain one's merit and trade the wisdom in the market. So no one in the mob will buy it. The mist of wisdom will be so loathsome in their eyes that neither glory nor lust will be obtainable in return for it. Hence, all who wish to enter may come and enter. Many will roam, and the knowledge will increase among the worthy of it. And by that we will soon be rewarded with the coming of the Messiah, and the redemption of our souls soon in our days, and may we say, Amen. With these words, I unbind myself from a considerable complaint that I have dared more than all my predecessors in disclosing the ordinarily covered the rudiments of the wisdom in my book, which was thus far unexplored. This refers to the essence of the ten sephirot and all that concerns them, Yashar and Chozer, Penimi and Makif, the meaning of the Haka'ah, and the meaning of the Histachut. I explain. Yashar and Chozer are direct light and returning light. Binimi and Bakif are inner light and surrounding light. The meaning of Haka'ah is fully described as Zivug de Haka'ah, or binding by striking. The meaning of Hisdachut is related to how to cleave to the Creator. The authors that preceded me deliberately scattered the words here and there and in subtle intimations, so one's hand would fail to gather them. I, through his light, which appeared upon me, and with the help of my teachers, have gathered them and disclosed the matters clearly. Clearly enough, and in their spiritual form, above place and above time. They could have come to me with great argument. If there are no additions to my teachers here, then the Ari and Rav Chaim Vital themselves, and the genuine authors, the commentators on their words, could have disclosed and explained the matters as openly as I. And if you wish to say that it was revealed to them, then who is this writer, for whom it is certainly a great privilege to be dust and ashes under their feet? Who says that the lot given to him by the Creator is more than their lot? However, as you will see in the references, I neither added to my teachers nor innovated in the composition. All my words are already written in the eight gates, in the tree of life, and in the Mavoh She'arim, the entrance of the gates, by the Ari. I did not add a single word to them, but they aimed to conceal matters. Hence, they scattered them here and one there. This was so because their generation was not yet completely unworthy and required great care. We, however, for our many sins, all the words of our sages are already true in us. They have been said for the time of the Messiah to begin with. For in such a generation there is no longer fear of disclosing the wisdom, as we have elaborated upon. Hence my words are open and in order. I am adding. In this section, Rabbi Ashlag explains why he teaches the Kabbalah systems to people not determined as worthy by others. Ultimately, he is saying he was told that the generation is totally unworthy, and thus it is time to expand the wisdom to all who will start to learn it. This is where we will stop for tonight. I hope you find these words as powerful as I do. I hope you will not take affront to being called an unworthy generation, because that's what we need to be to bring Mashiach. Because ultimately, there are no more righteous people. Does anyone have any questions? Tomorrow night classes, Tuesday classes, there will be a mini Zohar class at 4:30 West Coast time, and at 7 o'clock we will have a Tikkuni Zohar class. I'm unmuted.